You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
And you're hanging out with two divas and a margarita on this gloomy, rainy Sunday afternoon, and I'm Diva Tosh.
And I am Diva Cass. How are you today, everybody? We have a full studio here
today. I love it. Good-looking people in here.
Good-looking people, yeah, for sure.
I'll take that compliment. Awesome.
Yeah, take it.
And our special guest today is Pat Jones, also known as PJ Agile. Did I say that correctly?
You did, Agile, yeah. Perfect. We practiced.
Writer.
I know you gave her pointers. Yeah, the West Indian pointers.
Agile.
Writer, director, producer. Am I leaving anything out here?
I was an actor for this.
And an actor. Those are a lot of hats to wear.
Yeah, I guess. You don't think about it that way when you're doing it. You're just like, oh my God, I want this done.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself, Pat.
Actually, tell us a lot about
you. Yeah, tell us a lot about you. I mean, we know what we know, but our listeners don't know. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got started?
Actually, you know what? Cassie, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you.
Go right ahead.
We have a lot of people in here, and we would love to get a quick introduction of everybody.
Yes.
Before we go.
You want me to do the introducing of them?
Yeah.
All right. So this is Patrick Brewis.
Hi, Patrick.
How you doing? Happy to be here.
Patrick is on the podcast. Ovid's Flea is the voice of Jesse. He's also a friend of long standing.
Oh.
not allowed to say old.
Friend of long standing. New twist on that. Huh?
30 years.
Wow.
This year, 30 years we've known each other.
In kindergarten we met.
Are you serious?
No, he is not. We're older than that, and he won't admit it. Anyway, so Patrick is we met in college. I can't believe you fall for that. Yeah, you got to watch him.
It's the Tasha. Drink. She's already had a margarita,
and we have it all over the internet now. So,
So that's Patrick. Dear friend, and also just, you know, a great guy and a muse.
Confidant.
Dear friend, confidant. We have a long history together. This is Pavan Muzumdar, who is a producer. We've been friends for about 3 or 4 years now.
Hi there.
Kindergarten also.
Bless you all. And then Jonathan Moises is another producer who's here.
Hi,
and
Jonathan.
Hello.
Jonathan.
J-O-N.
John Jonathan.
No H.
No. Yeah. So, and I met him through his lovely wife, Erica. So we've become good friends too.
Also,
and
no age.
This is your team.
This is part of my team.
Part of your team.
Part of my team. There were actually, and Nick.
Nick, I got a clap for Nick.
Nick, we share the sound engineer who's just like,
he's the best.
He's MVP, man. He became MVP.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. So that's everybody. So that's who's here.
Okay. Nice to meet you all.
You too.
Wow.
So, okay, me. So my life is, I'm born in Detroit, not exactly raised here. I was here till I was about 10 years old, and then I went to all-girls boarding school in the north of England.
Mm-hmm.
Because my father, who is a educator, had been a Fulbright scholar, and it's a little convoluted, but anyway, he just wanted a different and better education for his children. So he sent us all to boarding school in England, mm-hmm. which we were attending a private school here in Bloomfield, Sacred mm-hmm. Heart Academy. And he was just like, at that time, for the same amount of money, the dollar was so strong that for the same amount of money, he could send us to boarding school, including airfare in England. So he did that. And he also was just kind of wanting, I think, to do something different for his children, African-American kids growing up in the 70s. I think he wanted to take us out of the pressure and the, you know, what's going on racially in our country, you know, post-1967, mm-hmm. to do whatever. So that's me. And then I came back here. My mother passed away when I was 16, and I looked after her for the last year of her life. And then I went back to school in England and then came back here and attended university at Wayne State. Mm-hmm. Woohoo! Good school.
Did you intentionally want to come back to Detroit?
No.
From England?
No.
Okay.
I never wanted just curious. To come back. No, mm-hmm. I didn't want to come back here at all. I would have stayed in England forever.
Okay.
I loved my life there. I loved life there. I think it's simpler. I also found it really fascinating that racism was not so covert. People were just like, oh. I've never met a black person. I don't know that. You know, I was like, yeah. I can handle honesty.
Yeah.
You know, and I also found when you come back to Detroit, Detroit is very racially polarized. I found that very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all that being said, when I did come back and after college, I worked for Detroit Renaissance Foundation for years. I worked on the Mantra Detroit Jazz Festival, the Freedom Festival, the Grand Prix. So I ended up becoming a big Detroit supporter, trying to like, you know, work on a lot of the stuff. So mm-hmm. I've done events, I've done marketing, my bachelor's degree is in theater from Wayne State. Then I moved to New York. I was in New York for 12 and a half years, loved it, never wanted to leave, swore to God they were taking me out feet first. I was like, I'm never leaving. But then I ran into some health issues because I came into contact with the gray dust from 9/11. Mm-hmm. And within like 6 weeks, I started noticing I was having issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I stayed for a long time.
In New York.
In New York, mm-hmm. fought my way and clawed my way to keep going. Mm-hmm. But it really just became I couldn't do what I was doing. I had been a television producer. I couldn't do that anymore. So I went back and I ended up in theater. And I was a managing director of a small theater space, The Cell, on West 23rd Street, which is a gallery and artist space. And it's mm-hmm. they branded themselves 21st Century Salon. So we did a lot of things. We did music. We did theater. So did a lot of cool things there. And but eventually in 2012, I came back, and to be honest, from a spiritual standpoint, it was just like God was like, "Oh no, you have to come home," and I was like, "But I don't want to ever," you know. But literally, the day that it was like, I was debating and praying and debating, you know, and I really was like, "Okay, well, you know, this will all wrap up really nicely. March 31st, my lease is up, so I'll leave at the end of March." And I'll come back and blah, 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 blah. Literally, like, in prayer that morning, the spirit was like, you got 6 weeks, sister. I was like, what? And I walked downstairs, and my building manager was in the lobby. And I was like, I am going to be moving back because of health issues. He's like, no problem, whatever you need. And I'm like, I'll be leaving my lease a month early. No problem. I was like, oh, great. So I did. Came back to Detroit and been here for 5 years now, going on 6.
Okay.
That's the nutshell.
That's the nutshell.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about Ovid's Fleet, because is this your latest project?
I usually have a couple projects going on all at once.
Okay.
So Ovid's Fleet, I started writing in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2007, I started writing something else. So they've been juggling for, you know, like importance in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But then it came to the it kind of rose to the top. So Ovid's Fleet is a novel that I wrote from 2006.
Well, we want to know, what is an Ovid's Fleet?
Okay, here we go.
And give us the full, because we were trying to pull it up in Webster's and everything, and okay. It just didn't work for us.
Here's your literary lesson.
Thank you.
All right.
We're ready.
Christopher Marlowe. He's a contemporary of William Shakespeare. He wrote a play, I'm sorry, called Dr. Faustus.
Hmm.
And the legend of Faustus, which there are also operas, Faustus or Faust, is he is a professor of metaphysics, and he sells his soul to the devil for 24 years of absolute power.
Wow.
Which is an interesting. We could have a conversation about that.
That's a whole nother
podcast. We talk about today's world. But anyway, mm-hmm. So he sells his soul to the devil for 24 years of absolute power. Within that play, within the Christopher Marlowe play, and he has great conversations with Mephistopheles and Beelzebub, who are, they work for Satan, the devil, and Lucifer, et cetera. So, but within that, he gets presented with the seven deadly sins. The mm-hmm. first is pride.
Mm.
And so within that speech, pride says, I am pride. I am like to Ovid's Flea. That is a reference to the Roman poet Ovid, who wrote an erotic poem. Fleas are an erotic emblem.
Mm-hmm.
And so because the flea can go absolutely anywhere inside your body, which is kind of disgusting, but it's an erotic emblem because some people would be like, I want to be like a flea. I want to be that inside you or that close to you. So that's why it's Ovid's flea.
So what does that mean to you?
So because it's pride, pride says, I am like to Ovid's flea. I can creep into any corner of a wench, meaning like pride, I can get into any part of you, any part of your system, any part of your brain, any part of your identity. So that's why, as opposed to calling the book Pride, which it was called Pride for many, many years, but there's so many prides out there, it became Ovid's flea.
So okay. you just went to bed one night and said, ah, I got it.
No.
Ovid's flea.
No, I actually, I studied Ovid's, I studied Dr. Faustus for my exams in England. So I had already fallen in love with it. And then when I was in college, I actually was in a performance of it and I played Pride. I've always loved the play. And I kept thinking, oh, Pride, such a boring, mundane name. I got to come up with something else. And so I thought about Ovid's flea and then I was like, eh, nobody will ever get that. I'm never using it. And then a couple of years later, it was just like, bing, Ovid's flea.
Okay. And I want to get to this because Ovid's flea was a book that you wrote and it is a podcast now. Where can we find Ovid's flea?
You can find Ovid's flea, the podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts. It is on iTunes. It is on Podbeam, Stitcher, Google Play. Thank you to John. It's in all those wonderful places.
Thank you, John.
That's so, what I'm here for.
Well, naturally,
The novel itself, to be honest with you, I got tired of trying to publish it because I didn't want to do self-publishing. I'm a little bit of a snob about that. So I wanted to get published properly. And so I didn't. I just got tired of rejection. I didn't try that hard. I got a couple of rejection. I'm very sensitive. So I was like, I'm done. And so I was just like, wait a minute. I'm a writer. I'm a producer. I'm a director. I can do this myself. We're just going to put it out as a podcast. So that's how it came to be.
Okay. Well, naturally, we listen to it. And so I'm a little curious about Patrick sitting here because isn't he a voice? Who are you, Jesse?
I'm more than a voice. Yes.
I'm more than a voice. You're Jesse.
He's Jesse.
Correct. I played that character, yeah.
Is that the only one you played?
Correct, yeah.
No, that's not. You played Johnny.
Oh, right.
It's
been a while. It's been a while. So it's been probably, what, a year since
we started? It's been a year.
We
recorded it summer 2016, so it's a year and a half now.
Okay. Yeah. And so this story has a lot of twists. It's exciting. I want to ask so many questions. I don't want to give anything away. But I'll just touch a little bit on the first episode.
Okay.
Because it pulls you in. It drew me in.
Okay.
And it's basically starts in the South. Correct?
Yes.
It starts in the South. Yes. And there's an abused wife who's trying to get away from her husband.
Correct.
And this is how it starts. And it goes into the story and she's kind of leaving him. And she's going back to a life that she used to have. So I don't know, without giving too much away, can you tell us a little more about that? And what was the inspiration behind Viola, that character?
So Viola, the character, well, first of all, my mother was West Indian. And one of the things I adored about New York was just this beautiful salad bowl. Not a melting pot, because melting pots are ugly, but salad bowls are beautiful. Salad bowl people, you know what I mean? Just like all these races and cultures all mixed together. And I love that. And so my mother was from New York, Brooklyn, New York, West Indian. And so I think as an ode to her, a lot of times characters are based on her. Throughout any of my writing, there's always some little reference to her. So Viola is this West Indian woman. I loved the strength and the character of a West Indian woman. There was also the actress CCH Pounder. She's Guyanese, which is West Indian and a New Yorker. So I love that type of presence. So anyway, so that's where Viola in that essence came from. A writer I had known at the time. I've always kind of been fascinated by prostitution, probably because I'm such a good Catholic girl. So it's just like the incredible, like, antithesis of my life. So I'm like, wow, that is so fascinating. So that's a writer I knew at the time had gone undercover in Vegas.
Okay.
And so I was so fascinated, you know.
By that might be a show in itself.
Wow.
Yeah. No, she, yeah. So I had talked to her and I don't know, just this idea of this woman and having had that life. And also the fact that they, the two women who run the prostitution business are highly educated.
Mm. Yes.
You know, I love the fact that they were taking this thing that could be shameful and they're not. They're they're educated and they're like, they make it a feminist, you know, manifesto almost.
Yeah.
So that's where Viola came from. And I don't know, the abusive relationship is out there. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's out there. And it took her a while to leave. She was there for 10 years maybe.
10 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's you know, she stayed so long because of depression. You know, it's like you get in some place and you lose your identity and you lose – I mean, I don't know how many people have, you know, around this table at least have suffered from depression or suffered from being in a situation you don't want to be in and you lose your identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she loses her identity. And also the shame of making such a huge mistake.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Because she was a very strong woman, and to have gone into this relationship and have stayed for so long, it is a little confusing, but that actually really does happen. Very strong people get involved in situations that is, they find it hard for themselves to leave.
And so, I think I tried to go into that in, I'm not sure if it's episode one or two, where we go into in depth in her character, mm-hmm. where we talk about why she stayed or the depression or, you know, what made her stay so long. So. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say, we don't want to give all the characters away, but because we do have one of the voices here sitting with us, can we talk a little bit about
the voice?
The voice?
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Is that the one with the chair turns
around? Yeah.
The voice.
I mean, you do have a handful of characters in your story, but let's talk about specifically about Jesse.
Yeah.
What was your inspiration for Jesse? And Jesse, why don't you tell us about your experience?
Sure.
Working on this with Pat.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. Do you want to talk about the inspiration first, Pat? Or do you want me to just
you guys could work it out.
I say go for the inspiration.
Go for the inspiration. Let's go for it.
You can see where that's the story. Yeah. You can see it right all over her face.
To be honest with you.
There's a lot of interesting characters in this podcast or in this book.
That,
very interesting and different backgrounds.
Well, because like people, that's people. People are not one dimensional. They're multi-layered. They're multi, you know, there's so many levels. So, so the inspiration actually is an earlier version of Patrick to a certain extent. You know, Patrick and I have been friends for 30 years. I've known him a really long, long time, you know, and one of the things was, you know, as he drinks more alcohol.
Somebody get this man another glass.
No. You know, I've known him a long time, and I'm going to be really – I mean, I knew him prior to coming out, and then I knew his struggle as he came out, and I knew
– Oh, by the way, I'm gay.
Okay.
By the way.
So, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Thank you. Thank you. Coming from two divas.
Exactly. And a margarita.
And a margarita. Don't forget the margarita.
And today we are not drinking margaritas. We do usually.
No,
what did you bring for us today?
Courtesy of Pat.
I brought it's Prosecco, but it's called Secco. It's like a flavored Prosecco. So we have grapefruit.
Nice.
Thank you.
If we get through the two bottles of grapefruit, we have mango.
It's really good. Thank you.
Know.
Thank you.
So good.
Sorry to kind of move.
No, that's
no.
Okay.
I was fine with that.
He's like, get off of me.
Distract. No.
No. So anyway, so Patrick's early life was the inspiration for a little bit of the angst of that character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the conversations we'd had back in the day of just like, ugh, this lifestyle and this life. And, you know, Patrick comes from a beautiful family, you know, that is – his parents were married for over 50 years, you know, and that's the model he wanted in his own life. And it was – it seemed at that point that that was not an available option to him. Now, the fascinating thing is I started writing this in 2006. Mm-hmm. We are now in 2017. The world has changed a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
So – you know, when I first started writing it, gay marriage was not even on the horizon.
Right.
So you know, and because I didn't touch it for years, and I'd come back to it.
Oh,
congratulations.
I officiated.
I like.
Oh, really?
Oh, it has to come back to her. Did you see that? It's my damn wedding. It's all I officiated. No,
I'm kidding.
We've known each other for 30 years.
Yeah, but right, like raised his hand so slowly.
Yeah,
so dramatic. And they're like
pointed to the ring. That's
pointed
right
to the ring.
Yeah. I thought it was apropos for the time.
Yeah, it's
right?
Cool. So, and the other thing was one of the funny parts was when we were recording it, and he's reading it, and he's like, Pat, it says he flipped his phone open. And I'm like, oh, we got to rewrite that part. Right. We don't flip phones anymore.
Nobody
you know
does that.
There's a small handful, but not too many.
Yeah.
Looked at it, swiped at it, something, but not flip.
No flip.
And not Jesse.
Yeah,
no,
really.
No. Yeah, right.
So anyway, that's the inspiration. So he can now take it away and
go
talk
ahead
about
it.
Yeah, so basically, the experience was, first of all, I was thrilled to have the opportunity. I'm a performer by trade. So I'm an actor, singer, dancer for a long time. I was a professional performer in the Actors Equity Union. Michigan was my first equity card. Very exciting. Moved out to L.A., performed a lot out there, moved to New York as well as in the U.K. So had a wonderful, wonderful time of it.
I feel underaccomplished in this room.
No.
Really?
You know what? Have another margarita. You'll feel
one.
Very accomplished.
I'm sorry. Wow. This is just such an interesting life.
Well, before you
been
go
yeah,
on.
Pretty exciting. Yeah.
You went from Detroit to L.A.
So, yeah, I graduated from Wayne State. Very, very proud alum of Wayne State. Mm-hmm. You can tell how old I am by the fact that I was a Tartar, not a warrior. Because they've changed
it. I don't know.
You don't know. Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. Any of those listeners will know. Sorry. So, yeah. So
you found your way back to Detroit.
Correct. Yeah. So the quick nutshell is that I moved out to L.A. to perform. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful opportunity to perform out there with a lot of fantastic performers, mostly stage, but some little film here and there. And then ended up back in Detroit. Since it's relative, I think, pertinent to the, you know, the story of Ovid's Flea, I actually was kind of having a meltdown, quite honestly. I was about 22, 23 and coming to terms with my sexuality and said, I can't do this. I can't do it. So I went back home, kind of back into the womb, you know, and went, so I came back home to Detroit. I was here for a couple of years and then ended up moving to Florida. Mm-hmm. I followed my heart and fell in love with a guy named Julio. Mm-hmm. That should be my first thing. Yeah. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Oh, I know that song.
Yeah, I had to throw it in. But anyway, I had always wanted to move to New York and be a performer in New York and live that kind of fun, gritty lifestyle. And started performing again in Florida and then eventually moved to New York where I was there for 12 years, basically the same time as Pat was there as well.
He's followed me.
Oh, God, here we go.
I'm totally.
No, did you guys actually connect while you were in New York, or were you there at the same time? Or?
She didn't want to connect with me.
Okay.
She won't. No, I'm kidding. But we ended up becoming roommates.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah, we were roommates for a little while.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a good time. But so I ended up in New York, and that's when I ended up kind of going to the UK to perform a little bit out there, and then came back to New York. To your question about Jesse, it was a phenomenal experience. One, because it was very readily available to me. When I mean that, what I mean when I say that is emotionally available for me, because it was there. I mean, like she said, it was loosely based.
Because I got questions going around.
Feel free. I'm an open book. I have no problem with that. But so it was very, you know, easy for me to kind of connect to that. And I will say that when we were recording it, I was thinking about it on the way here. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I wonder what they're going to ask, you know. And
I didn't know, you know. My question is, because you were Jesse and you said it's loosely, but were you ever married to a woman? And if that's too personal, say.
No, nothing is too personal. I'm fine with that. Well, maybe something. Sorry, as I realize, as I'm saying that. But no, I was never married, but I was pretty close a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Pat, I also grew up Catholic and still go every Sunday with my mom. I'm such a good Catholic boy.
Aw, you.
But my husband's Catholic as well. But it was an interesting experience growing up here in Michigan and then having moved away because I learned a lot of homophobia here.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I knew
no one who was gay back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up here, I didn't know anyone. It was never, you know, discussed or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't allow myself to discuss it in my own head.
Okay.
So think about that. You can't even discuss something that's a part of you inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
So when relating it back to Jesse, when she talks about that, the boy taking him over, I'm not telling too much, right? But the boy taking over, I really related to that because it's almost you dissociate from a certain aspect of yourself. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very relatable. I don't know if Pat and I have ever spoken about that directly, but
no,
she picked up on that in the ether of the universe, if you will.
Yeah,
clearly.
I think partly because I'd watched you struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd watched you, like, you know, try and go out on a traditional date with a guy and then, you know, you wouldn't hear from him or something like that or, you know, whatever. Or you would date somebody for a little while. And then, it's just like, especially in New York, it's the constant being cruised, you know, it's the constant all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt his frustration with that lifestyle, you know, and I think that was part of it. And then, you know, plus being in New York, Patrick is not the only gay man I know. So I did know the guys who lived in that lifestyle, you know, so that was part of it, of just mixing all of that together.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you say you were in a relationship, you came close to being married because he did love her, his wife at home.
Mm-hmm.
He says he loved her.
He did. And
you can tell that he really did.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy that you could tell. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I am too, since I voiced him.
My child.
I'm kidding.
It's a partnership, lovely. No, but, you know, I mean, you know, part of our story is that Patrick and I dated for a long, 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 long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
We dated and, you know, and we're in love love.
I still love this woman.
Mm-hmm. I still love him.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, look at her and just spend a minute with her and she's very easily lovable. I think I feel like I can speak best to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've lived that experience. I mean, and I will riff on Pat, like, yeah, I absolutely loved her tremendously and other women that I had dated. I didn't come out until I was 30.
Yeah.
So whatever that means. You know, but I didn't come out until I was 30, fact. But yeah, there were plenty of women that I dated, a few, I should say, that I absolutely loved.
I've known some of his other his girlfriends and that he loved them.
And that's my experience. Now, that's not always an experience for a gay man or whomever. But yeah, absolutely. And so – I think that was also an easy ability for me to relate to Jesse as the character who was married because I could just kind of, you know, extrapolate from what I've experienced my whole life or my earlier life.
Mm-hmm. And also when we were roommates, it was a very, you know, it was a very odd situation.
It was a pseudo marriage.
It was a pseudo marriage.
It was a Will and Grace.
Like, it was Will and Grace. That was our show.
Wow.
Totally related to that one.
It was a little too close to home.
It was a little too close to home because here we were roommates. We were really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
It was like really easy to not work that hard to date or to find somebody because it's like, oh, I get to come home to this guy.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
He's pretty cute.
Oh, and he's really cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of
he's
jealous.
A cutie pootie. So, you know, I mean, it's like it was an interesting experience. So that's why I could base Jesse and his wife on that type of like this weirdness of the fact that it's like I really love this person.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is not who I am, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So with that being said, and I have to ask, the characters that you have written into this play, are they all based on somebody that you know or a situation or a part of life that you actually wrote into?
Oh, yeah. Well, Mark is a riot.
He's – what a selfish
– self-centered.
Bastard.
What,
you know?
Can we swear?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can. We don't have FCC regulations here.
Okay, so he's such a – asshole. And
but there are people like that.
Oh, I know. Well, why do you think I wrote
him? Yeah, you're like, oh, this guy.
That's like every asshole I ever dated and boss I ever had.
Yeah.
All in one.
Yeah, so he was a piece of work.
Was
it? Good job.
One.
Good job on him.
Mark is just not one. He is.
Oh, he's a conglomeration of
He doesn't
people.
Get it.
Oh no, he's horrible. He's horrible. But he was really fun to write. It's fun. I mean, it was fun to write someone that incredibly callous. I mean, just horrible. He's horrible.
Yeah.
I think the whole Carlos thing is just horrible. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
You have to listen to this part. I'm telling you, it really draws you in. It's a good story.
Yeah.
And back to Mark. The other thing I found interesting about Mark was he's not a good person.
No.
But his wife thinks he is.
But don't you, I mean.
Does she really, I mean, she thinks he's a good person.
But there are so many people, I mean, and I don't mean to, I do not mean to be this cynical, but there are so many people who just are blind.
Blind, completely blind. They see what they want to see.
I think it's convenient blindness is what it is.
Well, it is convenient blindness, but it's like, but that's why I talk about the currency of their marriage. Mm-hmm. Because people do have currencies, you know, especially if you're not. You know, I'm this incurable romantic and I have gone through hell and back in my life, so I'm just really honest about everything. But if you don't live that way and you live, you know, kind of telling yourself and other people lies, then it's really easy to live that way. And, you know, I mean, she has a lovely life, Mark's wife. You know, I mean, she's wealthy and she's a nanny for her children and – you know, and she doesn't obviously have a great desire to be maybe in her children's life. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is the way I imagined her. She's not really much of a character, right? But yeah, so she can live with the lies.
She chooses to maybe not see certain things, and there are women out there like her who just choose to live with blinders on because they have this lifestyle,
right?
They want to keep the lifestyle, and so they don't make a but. For what I got from it, I just felt like she saw good in him, you know, and she thought he was this good guy.
But I think he's really, I mean, he just knows how to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he's a master.
Yeah, he knows how to play it.
New York.
He knows how to get what he wants. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about his relationship with Jesse, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You know, and you were talking about a woman and their perspective with you know, it's convenient or, you know, I can look past that. The same thing in a male-to-male relationship. You know, Jesse, I think, was so desperate for that kind of a relationship and to experience that he was willing to kind of push his own, like, dignity aside just to have something with this complete jerk.
Yep.
You know, he didn't care.
And also Mark is good looking. So it's like, you know, and
he's got the it factor.
He's got the it factor, you know. So that's why I encourage people to go to the website to see the pictures of the character so that you can have them in your head and kind of know. Because, you know, it's confusing. If anybody knows me, it can be confusing. Like, I'm African-American, but I'm voicing a Jewish woman from Westchester.
Right.
So, you know, they have to – it's important. And also, like, Annie – the character of Annie is Asian, but she grew up in Westchester. So
I was like, why does this lady sound like she's from New York? And she's
because she is Brooklyn.
She did. So that, I mean, I didn't realize you voiced her.
I didn't voice Annie. I voiced Kimberly.
Yes, Kimberly, but not Annie.
You tell us real quickly the website?
Yes, it's www.ovidsflea.com. So it's OVIDSFLEA.com.
Okay.
And that way you can really get a look at the characters. They can be in your head as you're listening.
Yeah.
And then also you can figure out how you're going to listen to it, whether it's going to be, you know, on iTunes or whatever. Please.
Or your website.
Or my you can listen right from the website too.
You have some producers here.
I do.
Also. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit naive about what a producer does. So can we talk to these guys and see the role that they played in putting all this together?
They are the wind beneath my wings.
Aww.
they really are. So
that's a big responsibility.
No, they're wonderful.
She doesn't fly very well.
Ouch.
So, but when she's high, then she soars with
really. Okay, oh got it. So yeah, so Pavan and John came in, or I asked them to be. John actually does produce podcasts.
Okay.
And had a podcast. And I was a guest on a podcast that he was a co-host and a producer on. God, was that 2015?
Yeah. Kindergarten also?
Yeah. So he was a no-brainer as a producer because I was like, well, I know I want to do this, but I actually know what's the nuts and bolts of actually getting it launched and doing it. And Pavan was the one who kind of was like, okay, so we need to do a Kickstarter and you need to do crowdfunding and you need to do that. And I was like, okay. And, you know, so he was like the person who had like great ideas and, you know, great money strategy and stuff that is just maybe not my forte. Mm-hmm. So those are my two producers who couldn't speak for themselves, but that's their introduction.
So how did you put this team together? I mean, you have a great team of experienced people sitting here. Are these just people that you've known from way back, or did you meet them along the way?
Kindergarten,
of course. You guys are going to run with that for a long time, yeah, aren't you?
Yeah, they're people I've known a long time. I really, you know, it's funny when you watch, you know, the award shows, and, you know, you watch people.
And they name this whole.
They name this whole list, and you don't realize it's like, these are people you like. You've cultivated and grown up with, and you know you've known in the business. And it's rare that you meet people that you are brand new and you meet professionally, and they end up being really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people you cultivate, and so these are all relationships that I've cultivated and are just amazing and beautiful. Including the now, there's a few of the voices and a few of the actors that were relatively new to me and unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Johnson, who voices Julian. And by the way, he voices Julian and three other characters, bit characters, within that. Mm-hmm. And so there was one scene, there's one section where he's voicing Julian, Tommy, Xavier, and Drew all in one. And he was adorable when he was doing it. He was like, okay, you want me to do all four? Okay, hold on. I got to get everybody in my head. And he was just amazing. So Dan Johnson is a Detroit actor, or mm-hmm. Detroit Ann Arbor, phenomenal talent, just wow. A phenomenal talent. Mm-hmm. And I met him through I saw him perform at the Detroit Rep, and a friend of mine had been in the show. And so I don't know, he came to mind. And so he was someone that I didn't know personally, mm-hmm. but I did get a chance to work with him and was just like blown away by his talent.
Okay.
And, you know, and to be honest with you, all these actors did this for $100.
Wow.
Wait, you know, wait, $100?
He's like, where's
what? Where's Oops, bad.
Excuse me? Wow. You did not prepare for this, did you? I'm sitting right next to you, Pat.
That was not supposed to come out.
You cashed the check so long ago with everybody.
Oh, did I? Okay.
No, but you know, I mean, you know, with the hope and mm-hmm. the idea that is, you know, if this goes on to make money, then everybody will be a most favored nation and everybody will make money mm-hmm. off of it in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, then there's Harry Wetzel, who voiced Mark, mm-hmm. who is at the Detroit Rep. Is at the Detroit Rep. So, a very talented actor. Somebody else. So, C.N. Yates, who voices...
I'm sorry, we're just having some white noise here.
White noise, dark noise.
Just you know, just if okay. you can ignore okay. it, just keep going.
I can ignore it.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Don't worry about it.
Sorry
about
that.
I live in New York. I can sleep through anything. C.N. Yates, who voiced Viola, who mm-hmm. I was hoping was going to be here, but she's a Lions. She's a season ticket holder for the Lions. She wasn't giving up for us. So anyway, mm-hmm. But she's right. phenomenal. So, and bless her heart, she worked so hard on the accent,
mm-hmm.
which was just this... You know, this thing in my head of like, it's West Indian, but it's New York. And mm-hmm. she would look at me like, can't you find someone else to do this role? I'm like, no, it's you. So, and then Anita Charlesier, who was a friend's cousin.
Mm.
And I did not know her. I literally met her the day she showed up to record.
Oh, wow.
And she was adorable. She was mm-hmm. amazing. But was that everybody? Have I named everybody?
Henry.
Oh, Henry.
How can you leave out Henry?
Henry. Henry's like the revelation because Henry is 20 years old or 21.
What?
He is?
Henry is 21 years old. So I wanted him to come and audition for Julian.
Mm.
And he is someone I've known. You know, it's like I know his family. I know his mom, his dad. You know, they lived a couple houses down from where I live now. And then they moved, but, you know, they're these amazing people who I adore.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he was an actor, and I think we'd used him for my playwriting group for something. So I was like, oh, you should come and audition for this. So he came to the house to audition, and he's reading it, and I'm like, oh, my God, you sound like an old man. This is never going to work. You can't play a 19-year-old boy. And then I'm like,
but
wait a minute. And I had asked a celebrity to do Henry originally, someone mm-hmm. I'd known in New York.
But I told her no. I want to do Jesse.
That was so perfect.
Yeah, you hang out with him more. This is all the time. Try living with it.
It's genetic. I can't help it.
Love it.
It is genetic. You're your dad. I love it. So, yeah, I had asked celebrity, and he was kind of like, he didn't really want to do it because he had a lot going on in his personal life, and he just was tired of working, and he had that luxury, so he didn't want to. And so I was kind of like, okay, let me get back to you in a week because read this. I think we're going to have you play this. And then it was a trip to work with him because he's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. He comes from this lovely, lovely family.
And he's playing this old
soul. But oh, he's old playing this guy. Old mean person. So then I'm like this. I'm like, do you ever have fights in your family? And he's like, no. I was like, yeah, I met your parents. I didn't think so. And I'm like, and then I loved it. I'm like, have you ever been in love? And he's like, I don't think so.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, if you have to ask, you have not been in love.
Right.
And then it was so funny. So months later, I told his mother all this. And she's like, oh, my God, I wonder who the girl was. Oh, this is great. She was like, she laughed so hard. But, yeah, so he was adorable because he was a complete and utter millennial. Mm. So he shows up for a recording session, and I had given everybody the full manuscript to read. And I was like, so you read it? And he's like, no.
Wow.
I get you. No.
It's a 21 thing.
21 thing. Yeah. So then, you know, it's like it was really funny, like coaching him through this, because I'm like, you need to get angrier. Mm. You need to shout. Can you shout? Please shout. Can you shout? Can you get angry? Do you know how to get angry? Can you get angry? And it was so funny. So, yeah, but we got it great. We got it.
Yeah, he did a damn good job.
He was believable. He really was.
Wasn't he? Hard to believe he's 21 and, like, the sweetest. His mother's line about him is that she's like, if he speaks 20 words a year, it's a lot.
Wow.
And he's just really quiet and sweet. And then all this was in him, so.
Oh, wow. John, you're so quiet over here, and you think that you're just going to get away without saying anything. But I will not let that happen. I'm very animated. I will not let that happen.
She's hit me 3 times. That's what I'm going to say.
I just want you to tell us, what did you get from this experience?
You know, I've never produced fiction. Mm. So to be a part of it and to hear all the recordings and the characters and everything was just – it was amazing to go through the whole story. I think the hardest part was I don't think I've listened to it as a listener yet. Mm. I've listened to it as a producer making edits, making changes, all kinds of things. But
sound
I have to go back and listen to it again.
Mm-hmm. But his wife did – Erica listened to it as a listener, or was she helping produce?
I don't know what she's – we don't talk that much. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Right. We just live together.
That sounds right.
Just kidding.
Pavan, is that what
it – Right.
What did you get from this? What was the big thing for you that you took from this?
I think for me it was just bringing something to life. Pat's been talking about this for a long time. I could see the talent there and was just like waiting to burst out. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, this is one of those mediums that where, you know, if you can connect with someone, you don't really need anybody else in the middle. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And then you probably know of Serial that came out in 2 years ago, and that became this big hit. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is something that could really make this book mm-hmm. go. So let's do it. Let's make it happen, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay. And you guys had fun with it.
We had a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We had so much fun. Pavan came in when we did episode 4, and there's a club scene in it. And so he helped sound design that. And, like, he and Nick and I are just, like, high-fiving each other again. We're like, this is awesome. Yeah. Nick, are you going to talk?
We always try to get Nick to talk. Nick, what did you get from this?
I think it was a great experience. It was a great time spending time with Pat and getting to know her and just working on this whole project that was kind of ready, but with her we changed it a lot. We did a lot of things and brought certain parts to life. And it was really cool to see her vision come to life more so. And she was like, I was excited too by the end, like at the same level, but she was just very excited all the time, and that was great.
Okay.
And obviously I got a lot of experience from the whole project as an audio engineer.
And you also worked on some of the music
and
as
I
well.
Worked on some music, yeah. Nice. I used some of the music that already existed that was mine, but that was instrumental, and it already had some like moods to it.
Right.
And it seemed to fit some parts really, really well. And then some really odd things, like the club scene music I had made for no reason, and I had saved at my computer at some point. And then just, she needed that, and I was like, I have this thing that I think is going to work.
That's awesome.
She's like, okay. And then it was just, yeah, some of those things I was like, that's what I was thinking, and that's what happened exactly. And it also taught me that you can do anything with that. Like, you know, you just have to think about, visualize the end product and just kind of make it happen.
Yeah, make it happen.
Something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Do you guys remember the club scene? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Jesse went to the club.
Mm-hmm.
You party
yeah.
animal.
Yeah. Yeah, you have no idea.
And he pulled out the phone. Yeah, I remember. I'm not going to say what happened.
He flipped
yeah.
it open.
No flipping.
Flipped it open.
No flipping.
Yeah. No, good. I'm glad you like that. That scene was just our favorite. Mm-hmm. One of our favorites. There's also the end, but I can't talk about that.
You know, Nick talked about your vision. And I want to ask you, where do you see this going? What's next for Ovid's Flea?
So the goal is, so Ovid's Flea is a free download, because the most important thing was to get me out there as a writer, so people would know who I am, because, you know, who wants to pay for something? You're like, I don't know who the person is. Why am I going to pay? So it's free. So for that reason, to get my name out there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind it is I'd still love to see it as a novel.
Okay.
But really right now the push is to sell it so that it becomes a television, a movie for television.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would be what's known in the industry as a backdoor pilot to a television series that picks up where the novel left off. So that's what we're really hoping. We're really hoping that you know, let's see, what are we in 2017? Let's hope that in 2019 you will see Ovid's Flea either on Netflix or Amazon Prime or A&E or maybe Bravo will pick it up. I don't know. They're not doing a lot of – actually, Bravo's not doing a lot of scripted series, so I doubt it. But yeah, so that is the – that's the goal. That's the thought, is a scripted television series that picks up where everybody yeah. left off.
So you have Jesse Patrick,
yeah.
Who has acting experience. Will you pull some of the voices that are in the industry into the television?
Did he pay you, for God's sake?
Did I say it right?
Will he always,
you got it right.
Will he always be Jesse?
Checks in the mail.
Okay, I should probably scoot away.
Well, I think sometimes the producers make that decision.
They just high five. well,
we did.
Oh my God, you guys are all in on this. The truth.
No, I was on your side. I
yeah,
said
he was
the producer.
Dissing me.
Oh, okay.
He was dissing me, Pat.
I thought you were dissing me.
You see, this is why the wind is not, you know. We have a lot of work to do.
The wind is still there, Pavan. I'm hearing a lot of wind right now.
As he sits and waits.
Well, that was you, Patrick. Now we know where the white noise came from.
Yeah. is that a racial joke?
Oh, it's getting thick in here.
No pun intended.
Oh my God! Can you imagine what all of us?
I cannot. No. You guys must have a blast every time you get together.
Yeah. We haven't had an Ovid's Flea party yet. Well, you down one?
I think we should have one.
We need to have one. You guys should come.
We would love to come.
We will be there.
So no, you know what? Yes, the answer is most likely not. There would be roles for people, but they probably wouldn't play their role.
Okay.
And just to be honest, like, the reality of it is that the role of Jesse is younger than Patrick is.
Okay. Oh.
But I play younger. She believed me. Tasha believed me earlier.
Put on a baseball cap and some.
Yeah. But makeup does wonders.
But I do think, in all honesty, like if we were going to move this into a series, he could play Tommy. And the role of Tommy would expand.
Isn't he like 80? I'm kidding, Pat.
Oh, you know, wait, and before you, so I need to add something to that. You know, Tommy is based on our friend Rick.
Is he really?
Yeah.
You never told me that.
Oh, we got to know more.
look at what comes out.
So when Patrick and I, well, that might be the Prosecco. So when Patrick and I were in New York, we have a third friend named Rick.
We were Three's Company in reverse.
We were, or the Three the Amigos. And so Rick actually had moved back from San Francisco and lived in our living room for a couple months. So, and Rick was a really good friend of mine. He and Patrick became really good friends. So the three of us have always been like this trio. And Rick has a lot of like crazy, he does this thing where he thinks that you know everybody. Mm. Oh, you know Santa.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Yeah, yeah. No, I really don't. He does it,
Rick. You made the podcast.
He did that with music. He does it with music and everything. Oh, you know that song? No, I don't. I don't. I'm completely unhip. You are so much hipper than I am. I do know that song. So Rick is, and he's also that type of person who is just takes care of you, takes charge, mm-hmm. takes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's like in a situation. He's going to be like, "Yep, I got you. We got this." So the character of Tommy is kind of based on Rick. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Can I just say one thing about Absolutely. Pat's writing? So it's so lush and it's so intimate that I think as a voicing the character, at least my experience, was a very intimate experience. Mm-hmm. And as you sit in your, let's say you lay in your bedroom and you've got your earphones in or you're driving through, you know, in the car and you're listening to a podcast, right? It's an intimate act, really. Mm-hmm. And so can I tell them about the – being in the shower. Oh, God, this doesn't sound right. This is not a good preface.
You know I think what I'm you're going to have to now.
Well, anyway. So I was in the shower with a margarita and two divas.
He planned that.
No, I didn't.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know where this is going.
So let it roll.
Let it ride. Okay.
Wherever it falls.
Yeah. It's not nearly as interesting as you think. So at one point, we had to record in a friend's shower. Mm-hmm. It was a stand-up shower, and we were in, like, you know, it was blankets, and it was about 95 out with about 100% humidity.
Yeah.
And she had no air conditioning. And so
she had air conditioning. We couldn't put it on.
Oh, we couldn't put it on. Right, okay.
Well, Patrick, why did you have to record in the shower? Just asking.
That was a very leading question.
Let me.
I was fully. Oh, no, I wasn't fully cold. It was so hot.
It was so hot.
It was so hot. Yeah, right.
No, let me explain. So you know, it's like I didn't. At that point, I did not think about a sound engineer or couldn't fathom that I could find somebody as amazing as Nick. So Nick came in a year later. So I recorded all this, you know, me being like, you know, I can do this myself. You know, so I recorded it on GarageBand, on my, you know, MacBook Air, going to various places. The first weekend I recorded, I actually literally took over I live with my sister and her husband and my lovely, beautiful niece, Sophia. So I took over their study when they were out of town. And got a bunch of, and got Patrick done, or got, you know, Jesse's done. We got Henry done and Julian all that weekend, pretty much. And then everybody else was like hodgepodgey to a certain extent. So my friend, who is also a massage therapist, Anya.
She sounds like a massage therapist. Mm-hmm. Anya.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Anya
sounds very zen.
Anya Brosta. I'm going to give a shout out to her business.
Yeah.
Mana Wellness, which is in Pleasant Ridge.
M-A-N-A.
M-A-N-A. Right? It's wonderful. And she's amazing. But anyway, she had the stand-up shower and, you know, and it was kind of like in her mudroom in her house and it was like laundry everywhere. And I was like, you know. That would make an amazing recording studio if we just put some blankets over that thing. And she's like, okay. So Polish Scouting Studios at the end of the podcast is one of the people I thank. That's Anya because she's a Polish scout. And so she's so when I said we just need to put a few blankets up, she's like, "Oh, if you ask a Polish scout to do this, it's going to get done." So she was like up on a ladder, she's throwing everything at it. So it was crazy. So we did. I had Patrick come back in and record a couple things, and it was like 95 degrees. We couldn't have the air on.
And I was not standing up in the shower. I was sitting in the shower.
Ooh.
And I crouched in there. The legs were hanging out.
I had to feed the microphone in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Love.
I have pictures.
Yeah. That's a good friend.
Right? Yeah.
That's leaving a vision in my head.
Right. And everybody's like, you know, he came in. He's like, oh, yes. I'm like, okay, well, you can strip now.
That's great.
I am more than a voice. I am more than a body.
And he said that. He said that at the beginning. I am more than a voice.
So I just wanted to finish that thought because, you know, I was trying to boost Pat up a little bit here, but maybe I'm going to rethink that. Lush, intimate writer, you know, and as a performer, as an actor, to characterize, you know, to voice that is a beautiful thing. And so it lended itself really well to, I think, a podcast because, like I said, podcasts are very intimate, I think, by nature. And so here I am in this hot, hot stand-up shower crouched in there with, like, navy blankets and, like, heavy wool blankets. I'm just sweating
And a duvet.
And a duvet, yeah. Laying on a duvet, yeah, or, like, crouched on a duvet. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is, like, as an actor, I am completely by myself, really. And I'm in my head, and I thought, this is really interesting, the difference as a performer on stage. There's that fourth wall, the imaginary wall between, you know, the performance world and the audience. And so most of the time you don't want to break that fourth wall. But you're constantly as an actor thinking about what do I look like? How am I coming across in the rehearsal process certainly? And I'm having to interact with not only the script and the words and what I'm thinking and feeling and experiencing, but also how I'm interacting or relating with you also as an actor on stage and also being aware of the audience. This was such a different experience in many ways because it is. It's literally just you. You don't have to worry about anything. All you're thinking about is that internalized, you know, experience that you're having and then voicing it.
Yeah.
So it's an extremely, extremely intimate experience. And I loved that opportunity.
And I think, you know, I loved what, even though, yes, Jesse was loosely based on him, but I did love what he brought to Jesse. You know, the angst, the tortured nature of being in love with, you know, his wife and also wanting so much more with this man, too. So I loved what he brought to it.
I did think the writing was, when you don't have a visual, you definitely need the writing to show you where to go and the actor's voice. You need to hear it in their voice. So that's all you have to go by. So I thought it was very good, you know, not having that visual and being able to imagine these things happening as I heard them.
Good.
We are running out of time a little bit. Tell us what is next for you and tell me a little bit about Arden Park Productions.
Arden Park Productions is basically the shingle of me and my business and who I am. That's basically it. I mean, I write for corporate if called upon. You know, I write fiction, nonfiction. I can write for television. I've written so many business presentations, it would make your head spin. So Arden Park Productions is just me. You know, it's like anything that I do goes under that shingle. I also do marketing and branding, and I have a method called the Brand Root Method, which is a branding methodology. So all that comes under Arden Park Productions.
Okay. And we can find, again, we can find Ovid's Flea at
www.ovidsflea.com.
Okay. Well, thank you all for being here.
This was a lot of fun.
We truly enjoyed it. And hopefully to all our listeners out there, you know you can find us at 2divasandamargarita.com. You can find us on Facebook. And soon you'll see the podcast here. If you didn't catch us live today, you'll see the podcast in a couple of days on our website and on Facebook. And until next week, have a good one. We're out of here.
Out.